in the last 3 games and in the last 11 days, the Kansas City Chiefs have won in Denver, in Atlanta, and now at home on Thursday night against the AFC's number one seeded Oakland Raiders, now merely a wild card team, because the Kansas City Chiefs have pulled off an incredible 3-game stretch to rise to the top of the AFC West and to the 2 seed in the AFC. Welcome to the Roughing the Kicker Chiefs podcast on Blog Talk Radio and on ArrowheadAddict.com. I'm your host, Joshua Briscoe, here on a Friday morning, because we can't give it any more time to rest. We've got to talk about what the Chiefs did to the Oakland Raiders at home last night. Prime time, Thursday night football. There's a ton of good things to take away from this. There's also some bad news about Derek Johnson, which we're all aware of. We're going to talk about all the good, the bad, and the ugly as the Chiefs have now, again, risen to the top of the AFC West. Let's start with some good news. Let's start with what the defense did and a couple of specific highlights from the defense. Pro Football Focus had a tweet after the game. They grade the best players on both teams after games, and the top graded Chiefs on defense out of 100 on a scale of 100. They had Eric Berry at a little bit over an 83, Chris Jones a little over an 83, Ramique Wilson over an 85, and then the top-graded player on the Chiefs' defense was Terrence Mitchell, the cornerback, with a 91.7. Now, that's just one metric. If you want other metrics, Nathan Janke from Pro Football Focus said Terrence Mitchell in coverage allowed just 3 of 7 for 14 yards and 1 pass breakup. Steven Nelson just 4 of 12 for 24 yards and 2 pass breakups. This Chiefs defense had an incredible showing, especially through the first half. But a really great showing from the Chiefs defense here. And those guys, and maybe more than anyone else, Terrence Mitchell, I think, is the story of this Chiefs defense. Because as Brandon Kylie pointed out at BK Sports Talk, the Chiefs released Terrence Mitchell a month ago. Last night he played a crucial role in beating the Raiders. That's now 3 Chiefs on this three real contributors on this Chiefs defense: Terrence Mitchell, Raheem Nunez-Roches, and Ramique Wilson, that were cut at least one time by the Chiefs this season. And now, leading the division, they are making meaningful plays, getting meaningful minutes. That's unbelievable. The depth on this team has shocked me at every turn this year. And I've been saying for this whole season, and I still will kind of cling to this, I think Philip Gaines is actually the second best corner on this defense. But the Chiefs seem to have a really different perspective on the Chiefs corners than I do, or than most Chiefs fans or analysts that I can find. Marcus Peters is obviously just an absolute drape over anybody he chooses to cover. He's amazing. He's an all-pro corner for the next 10 years if he's healthy and, you know, keeps some speed in him. But opposite Marcus Peters has been the real question this year. Philip Gaines was obviously the favorite to take over there, but his knee injury holding over from last year gave him a slow start in camp. They drafted Kavari Russell, who didn't even play an NFL snap for the Chiefs, even though he was the third-round draft pick. DJ White, the rookie, started to get a lot of minutes over there, a lot of snaps over there, but he was actually inactive for this game. Kenneth Acker saw a lot of action over there the last couple of weeks. He was inactive for this game. Steven Nelson played a lot outside, but he is clearly a better fit covering in the slot, being the nickel corner. So then last night, Terrence Mitchell got the start and had an incredible game after having a really nice game against Atlanta last week. Terrence Mitchell, again, who's been on this team for like 3 weeks or something, he was one of those guys whenever, you know, every once in a while there'll be a tweet from the Chiefs official Twitter and says, oh, the Chiefs have made 3 roster moves. They've cut, you know, this name, no-name offensive lineman and signed this no-name corner from the practice squad or whatever. That's what Terrence Mitchell was a few weeks ago. Now he's lining up on Michael Crabtree and Amari Cooper, and along with Marcus Peters, just shutting him down. It's just making Derek Carr's life miserable. So I think Terrence Mitchell is absolutely one of the biggest stories from this game. Now, we need to be careful, though, because Marcus Cooper had a couple of games like this a few years back, whenever Marcus Cooper looked like he was going to be the next guy to step up in the Chiefs secondary. I have a little bit of hesitance with Terrence Mitchell because of Marcus Cooper. And there are guys, Jamel Fleming had a couple of really nice games. This happens. Sometimes corners just have good games. But, man, I hope Terrence Mitchell holds up. And if he does, then the secondary just keeps getting better and better. Because I think Steven Nelson, as the nickel guy covering in the slot, is very solid. Marcus Peters is an all-pro. I mean, like, one of the two best corners in football. Maybe the best. I don't know who I would put ahead of him right now, honestly. If Terrence Mitchell can just be a nice number two outside corner, that Chiefs secondary is just terrifying, because I love Ron Parker. I think, and he's struggled more this year than he did last year. And last year he had to cover the slot very often with all the injuries the Chiefs had there. But this year he's had some struggles, but I think Ron Parker is the right guy back there for the Chiefs. And Eric Berry's having a breakout year, though he was pretty quiet in this game. Pro Football Focus graded him well, but he didn't make any big plays. In fact, like, I can't even think of a time when he made a play that actually was a positive play and not stopping a bigger play. Which is, this is not some indictment on Eric Berry. He just wasn't a big part of last night's game. But man, that secondary can come together really, really well. And I mentioned this on Twitter, and somebody pointed it out, I can't remember who. But someone said, that's what a good pass rush can do. Whenever the pass rush is actually harassing the quarterback, then Terrence Mitchell looks like a good corner. That whole secondary looks a whole lot better whenever Dee Ford and Justin Houston were on the field. But last night, Dee Ford and Justin Houston didn't have a great game. They were both very good in run defense, actually. Somebody had a great gif of Dee Ford shoving a running lane closed, just with one arm pushing his tackle back into where the running lane was supposed to be, and then forcing the running back outside wherever he was able to stop him. And Justin Houston has been a force in the running game since he's been in the league, especially as a veteran. Justin Houston is so good against the run. And that's a place where you can beat Khalil Mack. Running the ball at Khalil Mack is advantage run team. Running the ball at Justin Houston is advantage Justin Houston. So they were good in those phases of the game, but they didn't get a whole lot of pressure on Derek Carr. In fact, Derek Carr was only under pressure on 9 of 44 dropbacks. But even without pressure, he still only completed 15 of 34 for 85 yards. So Derek Carr, if this was a Raiders show, I think I probably would have started with Derek Carr to say, what on earth happened to Derek Carr in this game? And there was a ton, like from like the first quarter through post-game, the largest flooding of tweets was about Derek Carr's pinky. And if you missed it, last week against the Bills, Derek Carr was under center, and he took a snap from Rodney Hudson, And it bent his pinky, like, sideways, and it was horrifying to look at. But he came back out with a glove, and then the Raiders scored. I don't remember when exactly in their unanswered comeback he hurt his pinky, but they came back and scored, like, 28 unanswered points or something totally absurd. They were losing at halftime. The Raiders were down 10-9 at halftime. They won the game 38-24. The Bills didn't score in the fourth quarter. The Raiders had 29 points in the second half. This was with a ton of that was with Derek Carr having a taped up pinky, having a glove. The game was in Oakland, so maybe having a frozen dislocated pinky was the real problem for Derek Carr here. But for the second time, after first winning in Oakland and then winning in Kansas City, the Chiefs, I think, have shown with very little to complain about, very little to banter over, I'll say. The Chiefs are the better team here, and I'm not going to get defensive about the Chiefs not getting enough national media respect or whatever. I could not care less about the national media things. In fact, this could carry all the way through the Super Bowl, and the Chiefs could unseat those old Trent Dilfer Ravens as the worst team to ever win a Super Bowl, and I would rather have the worst team to ever win a Super Bowl than the best team to ever lose in the wild card game. You know, I'm not interested in that. I would rather be the Ravens than the 18-1 Patriots. So if the national media wants to talk about the Chiefs, great, that's fine. Again, I'm just not concerned about it. But I did get a little bit annoyed watching the kind of the excuse making a little bit for Derek Carr and for the Raiders at the discrediting of how good the Chiefs played, at least for the first half on defense there. Because yes, that was a factor. And there are going to be all sorts of factors like that all the time. The Raiders are missing two starters also. They're missing, I think it was their starting safety and a starting guard. the Chiefs were missing their two starting defensive ends from the beginning of the season, and Jamaal Charles is out. And yes, they got some guys back, but then, of course, Derek Johnson. We can jump ahead to this for a second. The worst news of the day is that Derek Johnson ruptured his Achilles again, and he's done for the season. That's typically, I think, an 11 or 12-month recovery time is what I've heard. And now at his age, like maybe that might have been it. That might have been the last play from Derek Johnson that we saw as a Chief, and that's devastating. Like, I think a lot of times, I think a lot of times in the media or in fandom or whatever, somebody gets hurt and we go, like, oh man, that sucks that guy got hurt. I'm sad for him. Now what's up? What's next? What happens next? And you have to think that way in football, and I'm going to do that in just a second. But with Derek Johnson, there actually is a sadness, I think, at least for me, and I think it's true for around Kansas City, a real sadness that's truly twofold. This isn't just a selfish sadness, because there is a selfish sadness of, man, Derek Johnson not being on this team is really going to hurt my team's chances of winning a Super Bowl. Like, they're obviously so much better with Derek Johnson. He's the quarterback of the defense. And for all of the talk of Eric Berry being the heart and soul of the defense, and that's fine. Eric Berry can be the heart and the soul of the defense, but Derek Johnson's the brain of the defense. Derek Johnson's the guy with the speaker in his helmet. He's the one calling the defenses. He's the Mike linebacker. He's the one setting everybody up. Like, I mean, Derek Johnson is the brain of the defense. Removing that is really a bummer, and I hope also kind of selfishly on some level that Derek Johnson, after his surgery, which I'm sure will happen soon, I hope he's like on the sidelines during games, even just because, first of all, I want him to be on the field, and second of all, maybe he can help out some of the young guys and try to instill any more of that wisdom that he can into those younger dudes, because there's something about playing middle linebacker in the NFL at a high level for a decade that just you can't really instill in anyone else. But the other thing I think it does, though, and this is the I think the truly unselfish feeling that I and a lot of other Chiefs fans feel right now, is I'm sad for Derek Johnson. Like, for a guy that's been on so many bad Chiefs teams, and then so many Chiefs teams that were good and didn't quite finish, this is the best Chiefs team I've seen in my lifetime, at least when I've been paying attention. I don't remember 2003. So this is the best Chiefs team that I've paid really close attention to. The best Chiefs team with Derek Johnson on it. And it's gonna be a real shame if they actually make a run here. I mean, that won't be a shame, that'll be great. But it'll be a shame to see them make a run, which I think they're going to do, and have to do it without Derek Johnson. That's a real bummer to think that he won't be on the team for that run, not be actually on the field, I should say. And they could retire his number tomorrow for all I care. I mean, you could put him in the Ring of Honor on Sunday if you wanted, a week from Sunday. But now I guess we have to. So that's genuinely saddening. That's one of the saddest injuries I think that this Chiefs team could have suffered, just because that's one of the real lifers on this team. Derek Johnson is a true icon. And again, if you want to call Eric Berry the heart and soul of the team, I think Derek Johnson's the brain. And then, so what do the Chiefs do from here then? Because it's always next man up. I mean, even everybody from Andy Reid to Dee Ford had talked about after the game, you know, this sucks. This losing Derek Johnson kind of takes the wind out of your sails a little bit. But what do the Chiefs do next? They have a really good team, a team that can really contend. How do they not let this derail them? Well, the Chiefs are already pretty shallow at inside linebacker. Josh Malga is on IR. Justin March-Lillard is on IR. And, you know, Ramique Wilson's just been on the team starting here or playing significant snap numbers for a few weeks. The interesting thing is that the Chiefs apparently did not rule out the idea of bringing back Justin March or Josh Malga from the injured reserve. You can bring back one guy from injured reserve. And I think Justin March had a broken hand or a broken bone in his hand. That might be easier for him to return and to jump in the middle linebacker spot. What that would mean, though, is that Jamaal Charles would not return. And right now, I think there was a report yesterday morning, I think it was from Ian Rappaport, that was saying that Jamaal Charles' rehab had been going very well, and that that he looked to be poised to potentially make a comeback for the playoffs, which would be incredible, especially for Chiefs offense that still has its struggles, then that would just be, that'd be amazing. But maybe, the Chiefs are going to have to decide what's more important right now, bringing back Justin March Lillard or bringing back Josh Malga or bringing back Jamaal Charles. And obviously Jamaal Charles is the most explosive of those three guys, but is he the most important? What are the chances of him actually coming back and really contributing this time? I simply don't know. And the Chiefs doctors are going to have the best chance of knowing that. Right now, though, I think it's going to depend on exactly what the Chiefs inside linebackers do these next couple of days. So now here's what I want to talk about again. After Derek Johnson went out of the game, they started trying to fill the hole left by Derek Johnson with two guys mostly. It was DJ Alexander coming in sometimes, playing inside linebacker, and then Daniel Sorensen coming in, bringing in an extra safety, and having him kind of play like a deeper version of that, of the inside linebacker spot. It was kind of bizarre, but trying to track it as best as I could during the game without having rewatched it yet. I like the defense better with an actual linebacker there at inside linebacker. I like it better when it's Ramique Wilson and DJ Alexander. DJ Alexander, he's a special teams monster, but he has some real skills inside, in between the tackles, as an actual linebacker, where he can get to the line of scrimmage. He's going to have a little bit of a hard time, I think, still keeping up with the speed of the NFL game and being able to read guys out of the backfield very well. Also, Derek Johnson is super underrated in coverage. There's not a guy on this team that can help with that. But I think whenever the Chiefs are afraid of being run on, they're going to be more likely to bring in DJ Alexander. I think if they're more concerned about covering a back out of the backfield as they were with the Raiders, that's when Daniel Sorensen comes in. I think that's generally how it's going to work. But I would love to see DJ Alexander really get the first shot at it here. Also, they're going to have a good chance to. Now, there's not a good time to lose your veteran Pro Bowl, All-Pro, probably Hall of Fame caliber inside linebacker. There's never a good time to lose that guy. But the Chiefs are going to have some time to figure it out now, which is nice. Because of the Thursday night early game, which, by the way, like, being cold and on a short week of rest, would DJ's Achilles have held up on a Sunday game? Maybe, I don't know. Thursday night games, I would love for them to go away, just because I don't think, Daniel Le'Batard says this all the time, I don't think we understand what we're watching whenever we're watching football games and watching what guys go through. So watching them have to do that on significantly less rest is just kind of incredible and insane. But so, yeah, maybe Derek Johnson would still be healthy if this game is on the Sunday. I don't know. But the good thing about it being on a Thursday right now is that the Chiefs have almost a week and a half, really a week and a half, to instill their new mindset, their new scheme, their new plan of attack on defense. They're going to have a week and a half. Bob Sutton's going to have a week and a half with DJ Alexander to say, all right, here's what you've got to step up and do. You've got to slide into this spot. And maybe a week and a half with Ramique Wilson, say, all right, man, you have to start calling plays. You have to know exactly what's going on here. You've got to be the brain of this defense now. And that's really difficult. You look back at what Peyton Manning did with the Broncos last year. He was the brain of the offense, but wasn't physically there to do it. You can't replace that. Like Peyton Manning was not a good quarterback last year, but he was a great brain of the offense. Derek Johnson obviously cannot do that with a subpar body playing middle linebacker. You have to replace that whole person now. Trevor Siemian and Paxton Lynch aren't going to get it done like Peyton Manning did. Ramique Wilson, DJ Alexander aren't going to get it done like Derek Johnson did. But Bob Sutton's scheme this year has been unreal. The peaks of this defense have been so high, so strong, that I actually have some optimism about. I mean, they figured it out in a couple of drives. Right when DJ went out, the Raiders started running right at that gap, right at where Derek Johnson used to be. But by the end of the game, the Chiefs had sort of reined it in a little bit. They had gotten themselves together a little bit. So I have some optimism there about, with 10 days or so, what Bob Sutton, namely, is going to be able to do to try to re-scheme and to rethink what it is that they have to do to account for Derek Johnson's loss. They're not going to just put DJ Alexander in Derek Johnson's spot. I think some things are going to have to change a little bit. And that's bad news. Because whenever you have a strength like Derek Johnson, you just know he can account for his space, then you can get more creative with your defensive line, with your secondary, etc. But I think Bob Sutton is going to be able to tweak it in a way that is not totally hamstringing the rest of the defense. So it is a big loss. It is absolutely a big loss. But I think it's one that the Chiefs will be able to recover from to enough of an extent to still see this team winning the rest of their games here, having a shot, at least having a shot in the rest of their games here, having a shot to make a real run in the playoffs. It's bad news, and it's sad news, and I'm sad for Derek Johnson, and I'm sad for the Chiefs. But I think Bob Sutton, if anybody is capable of stringing together something new to keep the Chiefs above water, it's Bob Sutton right now. Let's talk about the offense, and then we'll talk about how far the Chiefs team can go, and then maybe we'll actually get to breaking down the game. We'll see. Pro Football Focus, at PFF_Louie on Twitter, said Alex Smith had a 152.1 quarterback rating when targeting Tyreek Hill last night. Hill caught 6 of 6 against 5 different defenders. And also, not to mention his punt return for a touchdown. Tyreek Hill has done some incredible things this year. He didn't even lead the team in receiving in this game, though. He did lead the team in receptions, 6 for 66 on his 6 targets. It was Travis Kelce, though, who led the team with 101 yards on 5 receptions, 8 targets. He broke a 100-yard receiving game for the 4th consecutive game. He's now the 3rd or 4th tight end ever, I think, to do that. And a stat that I was actually really shocked by. If he ends up with 100 yards again next week, I think he breaks the record for most consecutive 100-yard games by a tight end. Chris Conley had a nice 39-yard long, and then another nice play to back it up with 2 receptions for 70 yards. He made a couple of nice plays in this game. Those were really his only 2 plays, but after last week I said I was kind of giving up on Chris Conley. I'm still not super optimistic about his role on this team, but he had a couple of nice plays here in this game. Jeremy Maclin, in his first game back, only 1 reception for 16 yards on 3 targets, one of which ended up being an Alex Smith interception, the other one almost an interception as well. Smith was 17 for 26 on the day, 264 yards, a touchdown and a pick, sacked just one time. I think that also that interception towards Jeremy Maclin, I should say, may have been as much on Maclin as it was Smith. It looked like a bad throw, and Maclin was cut off, but I was listening to the radio during this game, and Kendall Gammon, the sideline reporter for 101 The Fox here for the Chiefs Radio Network, said that it looked like Mac was supposed to run a button hook, and he didn't really hook back. And after watching the replay, that's what it looked like to me as well, is that Maclin sort of ran his route and then stopped instead of running his route and then coming back for the ball. I'm not sure if Smith would have been able to, or if Maclin would have been able to get back to the ball even if he tried to really pivot hard there, but it was not a good look all around. That was basically the entire passing game. Alex Smith actually had 1 reception here, and DeAnthony Thomas 1 reception. Alex Smith caught his own batted pass and went for 3 yards. DeAnthony Thomas for 1. No Albert Wilson receptions in this game, which makes sense. He was stepping in for Jeremy Maclin, so I'm not surprised to see that. On the ground, Spencer Ware got 20 carries, which I would have been pretty happy with before the game, but only went for 56 yards. The Chiefs really struggled getting him any sort of space. He made a couple of nice runs in some situations where they really needed it. And by nice runs, I mean 5, 6, or 7 yards. His longest run was 8. Latavius Murray had 22 for 103 yards, a touchdown, and a 12-yard long. Even no big runs in this game, but Murray was getting better chunks of yardage. Ware just could not get very many gaps, and he might have had 6. He might have had 6 or 7 in a few big spots, but that was really it. There's kind of the stats for the offense, but most of their great production came in the first half. The Chiefs led 21-10 at halftime. They didn't score in the second half, not even a field goal, and that's scary. I had the Chiefs winning this game by 11. They only won it by 8. Sorry, I really led you astray. But the second half offense is the point of concern here for me, I think. And Seth Keyser at Real MN Chiefs Fan, if you're listening to this show, you're probably already following at Real MN Chiefs Fan. if you're not, you need to start, because he has a fantastic perspective on the Chiefs. He said, I have to wonder again, where was the jet sweep action in the second half? It was working to leave Oakland off balance, and KC just stopped. It's the lack of motion, a staple of the Chiefs' offense, that makes me lean more towards blaming Reed for the second half performance at this point, inferring as opposed to blaming Alex Smith. Alex Smith had a couple of great strikes in the first half that we'll get to, but the offense really, really pulled up in the second half. And I've been saying for this entire season now, I suppose, that the Chiefs can't live on the strategy they've had of being conservative in the first half and then being aggressive in a comeback in the second half. And they didn't do that, but they kind of did the inverse of that in this game. They were aggressive early on, they got a lead on the Raiders, and then just said, well, we're going to just play conservatively on the, we're going to play conservative offense, aggressive defense, and hope it holds up. And it did. But that concerns me. If Derek Carr, for whatever reason he was off in this game, if he would have been on, if he would have been a more productive Derek Carr, or if that's Tom Brady, or if that's, I don't know, Joe Flacco maybe? I'm just trying to think of other guys who the Chiefs may end up facing in the playoffs. Hopefully not Ben Roethlisberger. Even next week, Marcus Mariota is having a very nice season. If Mariota is in that situation and he just has to pick up a few points in the second half, you've got to stay aggressive with your offense. So I don't like settling for that really ultra-conservative attitude in the second half, especially whenever, as Seth was pointing out, whenever some of it can be simple pre-snap motion stuff. If Tyreek Hill or DeAnthony Thomas are running around in the backfield before the play, the Raiders have to account for that. Those guys, especially Tyreek Hill, is too dangerous to not account for. When you account for that motion in the backfield, then all of a sudden other things are opening up, even something as simple as Spencer Ware out of the backfield on a route, because the linebacker who was paying attention to the backfield decided to cheat a little bit over towards Tyreek Hill's side, maybe took a step a little bit too soon. There are all sorts of things that pre-snap motion can open up when you have Tyreek Hill back there, and the Chiefs didn't do it in the second half. They didn't do a lot in the second half, frankly. Again, the run game never really got going. Well, they did try a little bit to eat up some of the clock, but the passing game really just fell apart in the second half. And the second half started horrendously with two plays and two turnovers. That didn't help. But even after that, the Chiefs' offense just never really got back in their groove after a 21-point second quarter, actually. After a 21-point second quarter and getting the ball back to start the second half, they just did not score again. So yeah, actually, the Chiefs only scored points in one quarter of this game, which you would not have thought was going to be a real recipe for victory. But a real recipe for victory, it was. Kansas City Chiefs 21, Oakland Raiders 13. The Oakland Raiders, who had been, for a moment, the number one seed in the AFC, likely though to fall to the Patriots, now the Chiefs take over as the number two seed in the AFC, just a few wins away from a bye week in the first round of the playoffs, and then a home game, and then, perhaps, a trip to New England to face the Patriots, or anyone who might beat New England would be coming to Kansas City. A monumentous game for the Chiefs, and they came through. Let's take a quick look at how the game unfolded. The Chiefs won the toss and deferred, and I said even before the coin toss that the Raiders would score first, the Chiefs would lead at the half and would never give the lead back, and that is exactly what happened. So the blind squirrel found a nut there. Again, the Raiders were playing without their starting safety and their starting guard, and Terrence Mitchell got the start opposite Marcus Peters. A couple of early game notes that I thought were interesting. The Raiders started inside the 25, and they could not get anything happening. Once again, the Chiefs actually, for the first, not once again, that's something they struggled with. The Chiefs got off the field in three plays. It was a nice job. Terrence Mitchell had a little sideline fade, defended perfectly, and on a 3rd and 8, the Raiders punted after on 4th down. Then, though, at the 38-yard line, Tyreek Hill muffed the punt and hopped over his own fumble, and the Raiders picked up the ball there. Again, though, the Chiefs pushed to 3rd down. 3rd and 5, Carr goes right to the sideline, and Peters was beaten by Mari Cooper for about 5.5 for a 1st down. The Chiefs challenged and lost. It was stupid. It was not going to happen. But then, again, the Chiefs stopped them on 3rd down. 3rd and 8, Carr throws a nice pass to Seth Roberts for the 1st down, but he dropped it. Janikowski came out and nailed the 44-yard field goal, making it 3-0 Raiders. The Chiefs get the ball, though, and they drive for a little bit on 3rd and 10 under pressure. Smith threw a perfect bomb to Chris Conley for 39. That was the long play of the day for Conley, and a beautiful conversion. The ball traveled over 40 yards in the air. Conley caught it diving. It was a beautiful play. So then Ware gets fed the ball. He goes for three and then four to get to third and three. Then on a Wildcat lineup, Ware hands it off to Hill up the middle for two, which was kind of a bizarre call. Didn't love that. On fourth and one, though, the Chiefs go for it, which I think was the right call, but you've got to convert it here. And the Chiefs did not. Ware diving forward could not get 1 yard. It's a turnover on downs, and the ball goes back to Oakland. But then Latavius Murray goes for 5 yards and zero. Then on third and five, Houston and Raheem Nunez-Roches get the sack, and the Raiders punt back again. Though then the Chiefs return the favor. They get to third and five and have a nice slant across the middle of the zone to Travis Kelce, who picks up 15 in the first down. Then on the next third down conversion, though, third and nine, Smith scrambled and threw it away. That conversion was not in the cards. The Chiefs punt it back. Then again, though, the Raiders go three and out for the third time on the day, punt it back to the Chiefs, where the defense, again, was just holding up beautifully in the first half. The only mistake that had happened so far on the defense special team side was Tyreek Hill's muffed punt. Even that only turned into 3 points, which is kind of tremendous. Then the Chiefs get the ball back. Hill fields the punt and brings it to midfield, but holding on Daniel Sorensen brings it way back to the 30. First down, though, this is some of that motion that I mentioned earlier. A fake jet sweep, then Smith threw a slant to Macklin with just a breath of space for the first down. That was a 16-yard gain. Ended up being Macklin's only reception on the day, though. Then Ware goes for two. Smith throws another slant beyond the first down marker, this time to Kelce for 16. And the game slid into the second quarter. First down, Smith went to a covered Albert Wilson. It was incomplete. But then on second and 10, and this is a play of the game here. The Hill kick return, punt return, was tremendous. But this is the play of the game, no question in my mind, because there's so many good things that happened here. Tyreek Hill ran a perfect post pattern and just threaded between two Raiders defenders, and Smith hit him perfectly, throwing the ball 40 yards in the air again. Just a beautiful strike for a touchdown, making it 7-3 Chiefs. And That was a 36-yard reception by the numbers, but the ball traveled 40 yards in the air for the second time Smith had done that on the day. And this is why I started getting excited about Tyreek Hill in this other capacity a few weeks ago, because he does a lot very, very well. He could have been an Olympic sprinter, genuinely could have been an Olympic sprinter if that's where he wanted to go with his life. He has incredible speed. He has very good field vision on returns. On the punt return we'll talk about later on, he needed like 4 steps. He found the hole and you knew he was gone because of that speed mixed with his vision. He has incredible hands. He catches everything. This is where DeAnthony Thomas fell short. Tyreek Hill catches everything. The other thing he does, though, is he has great body control and he's running incredible routes. That post pattern needed to be exactly there because Smith threw the ball. Whenever you throw a ball 40 yards in the air, you're anticipating a lot. You're anticipating that he splits the receiver, the defenders. You're anticipating the exact point that he's going to be at. And you're anticipating that he can adjust to get the pass, because the pass is not going to be actually perfect. Although it was pretty flipping close for Alex Smith there. But that route has got to be precise. You're running deep routes. They have got to be accurate. And it was. It was a perfect... He obviously has a straight line speed to make the Raiders defenders start getting a little bit nervous. Then he threw in the cut on the post, just split between the two defenders, and Smith had the ball right there. Just a perfect play. The protection for Smith, the throw from Smith, the anticipation by Smith, and the perfect route run by Tyreek Hill, the completion of the catch and the incredible speed to get himself there. Just could not have asked for a prettier play. So that made it 7-3 Chiefs, and the Chiefs would never give back the lead. Then the Raiders get the ball back, and once again the Raiders get to 3rd and 4. Carr is chased out of bounds by near the marker by Tom Bahaly. He was ruled short of the marker, and the Raiders punt back again. Then the Chiefs get the ball back. Ware couldn't get much, and Mitch Holt has made the point at this point in the broadcast and said that Spencer Ware was being spied quite a bit during the game because he's such a threat out of the backfield and on the ground and as a pass catcher. The Raiders were devoting a guy to just making sure Spencer Ware was contained, which I thought was interesting. Then on 2nd and 9, Smith's pass was batted up in the air. This is when Smith caught it and went for 3 yards. That was kind of bizarre, but he got a reception of the day. And then on 3rd and 6, Alex Smith hit Kelce about 4 yards, perfectly on target downfield. And then Kelce threw one of his little glide step things in and had a full head of steam and took it for 28 yards. Another really nice play from Smith to Kelce. Got to have to see more of that down these last few games and in the playoffs. Then Laurent Duvernay-Tardif hold made the next play, first and 20. Smith scrambled out of the pocket, nearly crossed the line of scrimmage. But then, like, this play was also, I want to take the time to praise Alex Smith again. He rolled out of the pocket to his right and was running as if he was going to go ahead and try to run for a few yards. But the rule, I believe, is that if you keep any part of your body behind the line of scrimmage, even if it's just your back toe, then you are still clear to throw the football as a quarterback scrambling. But it looked like Smith even glanced at the marker to make sure he was staying behind the line of scrimmage. Just a super present, super aware play by Alex Smith. That's the kind of veteran thing that you expect from him on the run. But it was tremendous. Because then, this was Conley's second biggest play of the day. He had a 39-yarder and a 31-yarder because Smith was scrambling and then found Conley on a busted play, and Conley caught it for a very short gain. But he just sliced through the Raiders' defense, moving beautifully again for 31 yards. Then after an Oakland penalty, Smith threw another dart to Hill for 16 to get inside the 5. A tremendous few plays there after getting pushed back with the LDT hold. Then on first and goal, Ware up the gut, picked up a couple of yards. And then second and goal, Trekendrick West came into the game, which I don't ever like seeing in two-goal scenarios because he's not the power runner that Spencer Ware is. But here, he was exactly what the Chiefs needed. He slid through the left side of the line for the touchdown, 14-3 Chiefs, touchdown, Trekendrick West. Then the Chiefs get the ball back again on the kickoff, and after a kickoff and a false start, the Raiders started from the 21-yard line, and they could not run the ball here. The defensive line was holding up very, very well, even though somewhere in here, Raheem Nunez-Roches left the game and did not return. They get pushed to 3rd and 15. Carr had a clean pocket and dumped it down for 8 yards. Another 3-and-out, their 5th 3-and-out of their first 6 possessions. Another tremendous performance by the early Chiefs defense. And then the next most amazing thing happened for the Chiefs on prime time. Tyreek Hill continues to shine brightest under the brightest spotlights here. The Raiders punted, had a penalty, and then punted it again. And Tyreek Hill did the most predictable thing of all time, because it was in cold weather where it's hard to punt against an unstoppable return man at this point in his rookie season. And it's always advantage return team on re-kick and re-punt scenarios because your whole defensive team is totally gassed. They've just been sprinting down the field to try to stop it. Most predictable thing ever with all of those factors, and still just electric. Because, and also, Arrowhead knew it was predictable because Arrowhead was chanting Tyreek, Tyreek, Tyreek as he was lining up to return the punt this time. And he heard them. He just took it back to the house in extravagant fashion. As I said earlier, he took like 4 steps, saw where the gap was, and he was just gone. He lost his mouthpiece as he ran back because he was like looking, and he was chewing on the side of his mouthpiece and just flew out of his mouth. He absolutely spun around Brad King, the punter, who is super fun. He is a super fun character, but it was a lot of fun seeing him get run by Tyreek Hill. And then King picked up the mouthpiece and threw it at Hill, as Travis Kelce was doing Brad King's, like, riding the horse dancing celebration past King. It was all spectacular, and it made it 21-3 Chiefs here. At JD Weinstock on Twitter at this point, he asked if Tyreek Hill is the new Dante Hall. And for what I do remember from the Chiefs, Dante Hall is one of the first, excuse me, one of the first really bright, bright memories that I have as a Chiefs fan, because he was the X factor. He was the guy. And I say this with appropriate reverence. If you on any level consider the offensive game of Tyreek Hill and Dante Hall, Tyreek Hill's better than Dante Hall already, and it's not even close. And that's not blasphemous, I promise. Dante Hall, in his career in Kansas City, had 5 punt touchdown returns, 6 kickoff touchdown returns. He had one more in St. Louis, so he had 12 total assorted kick return for touchdowns in his career. And that's tremendous. Again, I remember how dynamic Dante Hall was. Some of my fondest memories as a Chiefs fan. But in his 7 years with the Chiefs, in 9 years of the NFL, but these all came with the Chiefs, in his 7 years with the Chiefs, he had 9 receiving touchdowns. He had 3 in his best receiving year in 2005. In 2005, he had over 400 yards receiving, 436, and 3 touchdowns, his longest being a 52-yarder. That was his best season as a receiver. And as long as I can make sure, yes. So now Pro Football Reference has Tyreek Hill's stats here on all the way through last night's game. This season for Tyreek Hill, simply in his rookie season, he has 6 receiving touchdowns. He has a rushing touchdown. And he has, I guess, 2 kick return touchdowns. He has a punt and a kickoff return, I believe. Yes, 1 punt return touchdown and a kickoff return touchdown. 6 in the air, 1 on the ground, 2 in the return game. He has 9 all-purpose touchdowns 14 games into his rookie season. He already has over 500 yards. He has 547 yards receiving on 56 receptions already, averaging almost 10 yards per reception. He's catching 82% of his targets. That's insane. That's unbelievable. His offensive production's already, in a rookie season, he's had as much offensive production as, almost as much offensive production as Dante Hall ever did. Again, 9 career touchdowns receiving for Dante Hall. Tyreek Hill's already at 6, plus 1 on the ground. And that's not it. I'm not just like grinding on Dante Hall right now. I just think it's another way to highlight just how dynamic Tyreek Hill is. Because Dante Hall was one of the most fun players, one of the most must-watch TV types of players that I've ever seen. And Tyreek Hill is already moving past that. It's tremendous. So again, if you consider the offensive game, Tyreek Hill's already more than Dante Hall in his rookie season with so much career left. Strictly as kick returners, I think we're going to see Tyreek Hill become this generation's Dante Hall. I really do. So the Raiders get the ball back. They pick up a first down, finally, and actually string together a few first downs in a row here. On 3rd and 5, their second third down of the drive, Carr went to Clive Walford to beat Ron Parker for 18 yards, Oakland's best play of the night. Then on 3rd and 1, Murray broke right through 11 and about had it farther beyond that. They had the 2-minute warning then, and they kept picking up first downs, moving the ball just enough. Then on 1st and goal from the 3, the pass was nearly picked off. Pass interference called on Terrence Mitchell. It looked clean to me and to everyone else. It was a bad call. Then with 17 seconds left, Murray was stuffed by DJ Alexander, but after a long review, the Raiders got the touchdown call. It was overturned, so touchdown Raiders, 21-10 Chiefs there going into halftime. And then after Derek Johnson went out, I made this point, and this is actually true for the rest of the season also with the loss of Derek Johnson. I'm now more afraid of the passing games the Chiefs have to face, especially in this game. I was more afraid of the Raiders' passing game in the second half because DJ being out opens up the run, which opens up the deep pass with Eric Berry playing up more, with Daniel Sorensen playing more, with safeties having to account more for the running game. Deep passes become more likely. And the Chiefs' offense did not start off on the right foot here. In fact, it just ended, these somehow ended in not total disaster, but it really should have. The Chiefs started at the 18-yard line, and then Alex Smith there was a snap before the end of the turnover, because Tyreek Hill went up for a 5-yard grab while getting hit. It was a really nice receiver play. And then Alex Smith threw a brutal-looking interception. Kendall Gammon, as I said, thought Macklin was supposed to run a little button hook, and it looked like Macklin didn't come back for it very strongly. But that's an interception. Raiders get the ball. The Raiders now start at the 18-yard line. Then Steven Nelson was beat on first down, but got back to break up the pass after it was in Roberts' hands. It was a great play. Nelson had a couple plays like that in this game where he really looked like he got beat. But, man, he gets back to the ball very strongly. Then on 2nd and 10, Murray went for 4. Then on 3rd and 6, Carr threw a floater towards Roberts in the end zone but missed him, and 5 guys were getting pressure on Carr, which helped out on the bad throw. Janikowski came out for the field goal and nailed it, making it 21-13 Chiefs. But this 8-point deficit, this only an 8-point deficit, a one possession deficit for the Raiders, didn't feel like enough. Spoiler alert, this was the last time anybody scored in the game. But Alex Smith came back out then, and on the next drive, not that he shouldn't have, I'm just saying that's what happened. came out the next drive, dropped back to pass. Eric Fisher got whipped by Khalil Mack, and Mack chopped the ball out of Alex Smith's hand, and the Raiders got the ball back at the 18-yard line again. It was horrendous. Bad Alex Smith, bad Eric Fisher, miserable showing. The interception, I'm not sure where blame goes. I would say it's mostly on Alex Smith. This one also mostly on Alex Smith. Eric Fisher, frankly, had done a very nice job with Khalil Mack all day. In fact, the only sack was that strip sack. That was the only time that Alex Smith actually went down with the ball or lost the ball in this case. Not a bad day by Eric Fisher. A bad play, though, by Eric Fisher. And Alex Smith also, though, held on to the ball too long. That's a case where you've got to know who's behind you and got to be willing to get rid of the ball sooner or tuck it and move forward, anything other than that. But the Raiders get the ball there then. Carr misses deep. The coverage by Parker. Second and 10. Murray goes right up the gut for 11. But on first and goal, holding was called on Oakland, which was a nice gift. So they move back to the 17-yard line on first and goal. Carr had the back for a few yards, but threw the pass behind him. No gain there because this was an incomplete pass. I don't know why I forgot how to speak for a moment. Then on second down, a play-action fake. Went for a bubble screen. It was read well by the Chiefs. No gain, thanks to Houston and Parker closing in on it. Then on third down, the Chiefs rushed for. Carr had time. Threw it to Seth Roberts behind the line of scrimmage, and it was dropped anyway. No gain again for the Raiders. Then the field goal unit comes back out to try to make it happen, but King could not get the snap down for the Raiders. No points were scored. A turnover on downs there for Oakland, and the Chiefs really get away with one. After two miserable plays, two turnovers on back-to-back plays, the Chiefs get the break there, costing the Raiders 3 points. That would have changed how they would have played the rest of the game, I think, at least to some extent. So that was a big important flub by the Raiders. And the Chiefs start with the ball at the 21-yard line. Ware gets the handoff and gets decapitated on a face mask, moving them forward 15 yards, their best play in a while. But still, the Chiefs couldn't get anything going. A delay of game on the Chiefs, a bubble screen to Hill that didn't go anywhere. Smith to Kelsey for 5, turning into 8. Wasn't enough. Kelsey went down on midfield. Get to 4th and 2, the Chiefs punt. It was well covered, and a block in the back moved the Raiders back to the 9-yard line. Murray started off the drive with a gain of 3, then 7. Daniel Sorensen made the tackle as the Chiefs were doing that thing, as I mentioned earlier, where they played with an extra defensive back without Derek Johnson. I still think the defense seemed to be better with DJ Alexander rather than the extra defensive back, as it was shown on the next play when Alexander came in and Murray only went for 1 yard. Then Mitchell blanketed Cooper and Carr. Carr underthrew him anyway. Then on 3rd and 9, again, another success for the Chiefs' defense. Carr went back to pass. He overthrew Crabtree badly, and the Chiefs got some pressure with just 4 guys. But Houston and Ford, as I said earlier, they'd been playing well in the run game. They'd been closing up some lanes, staying home on the edges, but they weren't getting to Derek Carr. They were getting enough pressure to keep him rattled, I think, and he was really struggling. But Houston and Ford were not closing very well, and the Raiders punt back regardless, though. The Chiefs start on the 38 after a poor punt. Then Ware behind Sherman picked up 6, then 5 more, then another 6. That was one of those little strings there of some success on the ground, but still short success on the ground, but he got in a little bit of a groove. Then 2 more yards, and the Chiefs are at 3rd and 2. Empty backfield. Smith almost throws a pick on a very short pass. I was ready to be mad about Alex Smith, but Travis Kelce got absolutely tackled there. Also, just run the ball. It worked for 4 plays in a row. Run the ball again. But Travis Kelce got absolutely mugged on that play, and that's a case where I am willing to go say the refs missed it. I get a lot of tweets about the game being rigged, and I don't prescribe to that on any level. Referees miss calls sometimes. I don't think the NFL has an agenda. I don't think Dean Blandino is corrupt, but they missed that call. The Chiefs tried to get the Raiders to jump off sides. They didn't. They took the delay of game and then punted. And I thought at this point the Chiefs would definitely need more points, but playing that slower, run-the-ball type of offense had to be nice for the defense to finally get a break. ESPN Stats and Info also at this point said that Derek Carr was 1 of 10 for 18 yards on passes thrown more than 5 yards downfield at that point in the game, which is a really, really damning stat. Carr goes to Cooper, picks up a few yards, then Murray runs for 8 and a first down, then to Rivera for 14, then to Rivera for just 1, just cracked open by Daniel Sorensen. Then on 2nd and 9, Carr went across the middle on a crossing pattern. The ball was deflected up by Ron Parker and almost picked off by Ramique Wilson. That would have been big. Then on 3rd and 9, Carr tried to flip it to the running back, but Wilson was on him like glue. A great play by Ramique Wilson, and the Raiders punt again. The Chiefs should have had the ball on the 41-yard line, but another hold moved them back to like the 10. So it should have been. It should be hard to commit penalties on punt returns. I will never totally understand how they're so prevalent, blocking the back and holding and everything. It drives me crazy. But then on offense on the next play, Fisher was called for holding, so then it's 1st and 13 from the 4-yard line. Alex Smith from his own end zone, which is, has disaster written all over it, but then apparently not, because Alex Smith, again, playing out of his head occasionally. This is the best play of the second half on the offense. He threw 34 yards beyond line of scrimmage to Travis Kelce in double coverage, who leaps, splits the defenders, turns back to the ball, and pulls it in. An okay throw, a great risk, but a brilliant catch by Travis Kelce. That Smith had made plays earlier where he made the plays. This is a case where he bet on the right guy, and Travis Kelce made the play. And I hope he has that mindset more often. I want to see Alex Smith just bet on the right guy. Travis Kelce is one of those guys that I'm totally happy to see him take the gamble on. So then Spencer Ware gets 4 yards, then one. Then on 3rd and 4, Alex Smith under duress goes around the edge, outruns defenders, and gets the first down on the ground. This was another really nice thing to see from Alex Smith. It had just been a little while since we had seen him convert a first down on the ground. But then it stalls for the Chiefs. Smith hit Ware in the flat after the fake handoff for 7, then a loss of 1 on the run. On 3rd and 4, Smith goes to Macklin beyond the first down marker, and the pass was deflected as the pass was behind him anyway. And the Chiefs then punt. Raiders start at the 13-yard line. Time's starting to slip away here a little bit, but Carr throws it behind Cooper on the run, missed it badly. Then Murray went for 12 and 3. Then Carr threw low to Seth Roberts. Steven Nelson broke it up again. Another instance of him getting beat, but then making a play on the ball. 3rd and 7, Carr stepped up. This is a big play here. Carr stepped up through the pressure and was running forward a little bit. Took a deep shot for Amari Cooper and overthrew him on what would have been a definite touchdown. But then actually, upon further review, everyone went, well, Amari Cooper actually needed to just read that ball better. It actually seemed like a little bit of an underthrow, perhaps. Well, now, since the game ended, there was some speculation about the ball maybe hitting a wire for one of those spider cam things above the field for those big gliding shots. But NBC apparently has said that was not the case because that camera was behind line of scrimmage. And upon further review, it looks like the ball was just coming out of Carr's hands awkwardly. Maybe that pinky played a factor, which is again fine by me, as long as it ends in a Chiefs victory. So maybe that pinky was playing a factor. It was coming out of his hand a little bit funky. And it, as long of a pass as it was, if there was any wobbling in the ball at all, which it appeared to be, there appeared to be some of on the throw, a little bit of wind catches it in Arrowhead as the wind can swirl a little bit down there. And that might have been the real defender on that play. Because if that was in pristine conditions and they're playing that in Oakland with a healthy Derek Carr, that's a touchdown. But it wasn't there, which is just fine with me. The Chiefs don't do much, though, because on first down, Smith throws out of bounds. Then on second, Ware goes for no gain. Then on 3rd and 10, empty backfield, pass to Hill behind the line for meager gain. This was miserable. This was the Andy Reid play calling on one drive that made everybody gag, because the Chiefs just needed to get off the field here, or I guess stay on the field here, the exact opposite. The Chiefs just needed to make enough plays to stay on the field and keep the Raiders uncomfortable. But it simply didn't happen here. That was a miserable showing on that drive. But the Chiefs punt, get it down at the 15-yard line, and the Raiders have a chance to try to come back at this last, one of their last chances here, ended up being their actual last chance. They ran for 8, then Carr went to Crabtree for 6, then 4 more on the ground by Rashard, then another 4 yards. 3rd and 2, Murray was hit by Houston in the line of scrimmage, but Murray ran through him for the first down. Then Carr had to use a timeout to fix a lineup issue. That was big. Then on 1st and 10, Carr from the 39 went to Crabtree, but Steven Nelson got the defensive pass interference. A really miserable call again. Nelson just made a play to punch the ball out. That was awful. Then Carr to Clive Walford for 2. Then Murray picked up 3. Then on 3rd and 4 from 36, Derek Carr got hit by Justin Houston as he threw, forcing 4th down. Then on 4th and 4, the Raiders went for it here, as they probably should have. Seemed like the right move. Then we're going to bet on their defense. They went for it and got it. Roberts was crossing down the line of scrimmage, and though that pass was complete, Roberts took it right there and then got it past the marker all the way down to the 23-yard line. Then Rashard for 9 on 2nd and 10. Then on 3rd and 1, a pass to the end zone was knocked away by Peters. 4th and 1 with 2:01 on the 14-yard line. False start on Oakland gets moved back to 4th and 6. Man, I mean, you just cannot get a penalty on 4th and 1. fourth and six, 19-yard line, 2 minutes and 1 second remaining here. Obviously, the Raiders go for it. And Terrence Mitchell breaks up the pass inside of the five. Great play by Mitchell here, and the Chiefs get the ball back. It's all about then, can the Chiefs close it out? Well, first down, Spencer Ware went for 7 yards. Then on second and three, Ware for no gain. But on third and two, so 1 yard gain there previously. But on third and two, Spencer Ware lines up, gets the handoff, and gets the first down. Then it's all about taking knees from there as the Kansas City Chiefs win at home on Thursday Night Football, their third impressive victory in a row, beating the Oakland Raiders 21-13. One little bit of news just popped up on Twitter. Andy Reid says Josh Malga is not eligible to return from the IR, but Justin March Lillard is. So maybe he returns, and if he doesn't, Jamal Charles is still in play to come back before the playoffs. So there's a little bit of news. Now let's get to the takes and takeaways. What did you have to say after the game? Questions, concerns, what did you take away here? You can always chime in right after the game. I'll send out a tweet. You can reply to that tweet. You can at me. You can use the hashtag RTKTT. Ideally do all of those things. It makes it the easiest to make sure that I don't miss you here. But the Chiefs win. What did you have to take away from it? Here's the first one up from Justin Henderson at Justin C. Hind. Here are four questions. How do you replace DJ? Is the run game back? Is Macklin ever coming back? And is D. Ford? A bunch of really good questions here. I think I talked about Derek Johnson already earlier. I think I would like to see DJ Alexander slide into that other inside linebacker spot. If they don't bring Justin March-Lillard back, that is an interesting option though as well. I don't want to see them try to replace Derek Johnson with Daniel Sorensen, no matter what their gimmick to it is. But if they do that, I'm going to say it's because Bob Sutton has a good feeling for the way they scheme around their defense. I think that would be a big blow to the run game, but maybe actually strengthen up their passing game a tiny bit. I mean, as good as DJ was in pass coverage, Daniel Sorensen playing safety gives you more versatility in the secondary, but a whole lot less force in the run game. Is the run game back? I don't know. No, it's not. Andy Reid realized that this was a good time to give Spencer Ware 20 carries, but it did not turn into much yardage at all. As I said earlier, I think it was around 56 yards there for Spencer Ware. No, the run game's not back, but because the offensive line hasn't run blocked well at all. Is Macklin ever coming back? I don't know. They held him for this game. They wanted him to be on the field for this game, and I don't have the snap counts yet. I don't think those have been released yet or published anywhere yet, but I think he was on the field plenty. He got 3 targets in this game. That's as many as Chris Conley, but he only just had that 1 reception, so I'm not sure if it's going to take some more time for him to get back to full health, if he wasn't on the field as often as I thought he was, or if Alex Smith and he just need to get back into a rhythm again. I'm a little concerned there, though. And D. Ford, I don't know. I don't know what to do about D. Ford right now because, again, he and Justin Houston were both pretty quiet in this game. Houston and Nunez Roches had the sack. They had good run defensive showings, but not a lot of pass rush from either Houston or Ford here. So I maintain a little bit of concern, hoping that D. Ford just isn't totally healthy yet, and having a nice long week now will help get him back to 100%. From Andrew Dowdswell, so it didn't feel like a Chiefs win, if I'm honest. More of an Oakland loss with the misplays on offense. DJ is a huge loss also. That's a take right there. That's a take. I'm going to leave that for now because there's another question about who won this game, who lost this game. We'll get back to. There's a take from Andrew. Then from Blake Johns, so did we unlock Randall Cunningham, perhaps Derek Thomas? This was very much an NFL Street unlocking something type of game. You win 3 games in a row against like a top 3 offense, a top 3 defense, top 5 offense. You win all of those games in 11 days, you unlock Randall Cunningham in NFL Street too. I think, yes, the Chiefs should. But probably stick with Alex Smith still, not 90-year-old Randall Cunningham. Randall Cunningham, by the way, I think in his early 50s, like younger than my dad probably. Not actually 90, but in football years, 90. Then from Michael Dewey's, Mitchell and Hill, MVP for the game. Terrence Mitchell, incredible. Obviously, Tyreek Hill has been fantastic. There was something, though, that I feel like I missed about Mitchell Schwartz. The other Mitchell that we shouldn't forget about in this game, here it is, a Pro Football Focus stat. In 2 games against the Raiders this year, right tackle Mitchell Schwartz has not allowed a sack, a hit, or a hurry. So that was before that was during the game. After the game, he allowed 1 total pressure. There we go. In 2 games against the Raiders this year, Mitchell Schwartz did not allow a single sack or hit, but 1 total pressure. That's why you sign Mitchell Schwartz in the offseason. That is huge. That, I mean, you can't understate that. But we forget because he's a right tackle. from Matthew Livingston at Matrix System, still my favorite Twitter handle. Man, huge win, gritty and ugly, sometimes beautiful, DJ injury looming large, heartbroken. Samir Hinjuna at Hinjuna, that was painful. Pray for DJ, need inside linebacker help. Why does the defense or special teams always have to bail out the offense? Why it's so conservative in the second half? For the questions there, the defense and special teams, I think it looks like bailing out the offense, but it's just actually what the defense and special teams are made of. Like, that's just what they do. Tyreek Hill is going to make special teams plays, going to give at least good field position a few times a game. The defense has been making big plays this whole season now. That's kind of their job. That's kind of just what they do. That's what they're good at. That's what makes this team potentially Super Bowl contender level, as opposed to being a nice team, a nice third wild card, second wild card type of team. If this defense was just really good but wasn't a playmaking defense, we'd be saying, oh, they'll get the last wild card spot. Raiders win the division. Maybe they get, you know, maybe even the second to last, just the first wild card spot. I don't know why I said it like that. Look at the first wild card spot, and then they'll go to Oakland eventually, or they'll go to Houston, whatever. Again, we'll see how that goes. But because the defense is so playmaking, they have a higher ceiling than that. And then also, why so conservative in the second half? Andy Reid is confusing me on that level, to where one of the halves has to be conservative, the other's aggressive, and they end up winning. If it ends in victories at this point, I'm going to... This setup, where an aggressive first half followed by a conservative second half, bothers me less, because you're, instead of digging yourself into a hole, you're getting a lead and then trying to defend it. But you've still got... If you're talking about like some of that motion, you still have to do enough to keep the defense on their heels there. From Keyshawn Brown at ChiefPriest_25, we missed DJ, Tyreek, damn, Alex Bald, and Terrence Mitchell. What a surprise. Yes, after a nice game last week for Terrence Mitchell, I agree with Michael Dewey at Dewey Mike, if I didn't say that earlier, that Mitchell and Hill are the MVPs for this game. From Kevin T. Priester at KT Priest, said, I like that Andy stayed committed to trying to get the run game going. You can tell who the NFL wanted to win. I refuse to indulge your conspiracy theories, Kevin. But I do like that Andy Reid also stuck to the run game there, because, again, especially later in the game, that defense just needed a breather. You just got to keep that defense off the field for a little while so they can come back in full force, especially if they're trying to figure out how to deal with having no Derek Johnson. So, yes, even though it wasn't super effective in this game, I'm glad that Andy Reid was confident enough in Spencer Ware to continue to give him some carries. From Kyle Asher at KAsher923, no DJ will hurt, but who cares about the 20th ranked pass and rush defense? Tonight we look like a top 5 one. Yes, those stats, it all depends on how you look at the statistics. I'm guessing that you're referring to yards given up. But when you actually watch this Chiefs defense, everybody understands, I think, this is a top 5 defense in the NFL, partially, again, because of their playmaking abilities. From Ty Declare at TyDeclare44, it's time to trust the system over the players. DJ going out was a gut punch, but as always, the next man up steps up. This defense is made of something special. A lot of heart and a team-first effort. Ramique Wilson balled out big time, where did just enough to win, but it looked like that bowling ball we know him to be. The offense needs to feed TK all day. I think TK is probably TH. Maybe TK short for Tyreek. Oh, it's Travis Kelce. I'm an idiot. God, I'm stupid. That also shows you my biases, I think, is where I want the ball to go on offense more often, but also needed to be feeling Travis Kelce more. Man, I'm dumb. Yeah, that's a good take there, Ty. I agree that the system is going to cover up the loss of DJ. It's going to make him look less important than he actually was, because they are going to be able to fill that hole. From Phil Burt at Loki Babylon, so what an awesome win. Sucks about DJ, though. Super Bowl bound. You shouldn't have your sights set any lower than the Super Bowl at this point. From Travis Ice at Travis Ice 81, Terrence Mitchell had a better game than Sean Smith, but the Chiefs should have franchised Smith and let go of Eric Berry. Yes, I'm stupid. I get it. I know I'm dumb. Before the season, I said the Chiefs should franchise tag. I don't play for them or work on their front office. Excuse me. I'm coughing out of shame, I think. I thought the Chiefs should have kept Sean Smith and at least not given a long-term deal to Eric Berry. Ideally, I would have had them franchising Eric Berry and trying to give a long-term deal to Sean Smith, because, you know, I wasn't betting on Terrence Mitchell coming in to lock down the position, which, first of all, he still hasn't done yet. He's got to do it consistently. Playoffs are coming. He's got to lock it in here soon. Also, obviously, the Chiefs agreed with me to some extent, because they signed Terrence Mitchell late and then cut him and then signed him and... And they went and drafted Kavari Russell. They knew this corner position was going to be a problem. and now hopefully it's being fixed by a very unlikely candidate. Ty, I declare again, I know that KC was playing conservative in the last half, but Tennessee must be licking their chops thinking about the run game right now. The difference between KC and the rest of Oakland's opponents, though, our defense doesn't break if momentum starts to fade. I agree. I'll preview the Titans later, but I do think there are going to be some favorable matchups for Tennessee. The Chiefs need to make sure that they're careful of, but a long week for Andy Reid. I'm not too worried about it yet. And also, yes, I tweeted this very early in the game to that same point there, Ty, that I think the Chiefs' offense will break out before the Chiefs' defense ever breaks down, and that's why I'm confident in this team at this point, because of that exact point. From Chris Tupin at Raider-12, congrats on the win tonight. Hated the play calling for the Raiders down the stretch, but the Chiefs definitely played better. Thank you, Chris. I agree. Also, Chris being a Raider fan coming across the aisle there, I appreciate it. From Michael Dewey again, he said, I still can't believe we went 3-0 through that hell schedule. Yeah, I can't either. Especially also like losing to Tampa Bay makes that four-game stretch even more bizarre looking. Well, Tampa's fine. I have no problem with Tampa Bay being good. But man, 3-0 in that stretch, yes, completely unbelievable. Although KT Priest again, kind of hard to celebrate with DJ going down. He deserves to be a part of this. I couldn't agree more with that. It's just where the Chiefs are stuck now, which is kind of sad and kind of frustrating. I was talking about Terrence Mitchell, and Three Gravy Cats chimed in and said, Mitchell's too slow to be a guy you want as your permanent starter. Phenomenal depth guy, though. That's really interesting. I'm totally cool with that. I think at this point he's probably the starter going forward just because who's going to dethrone him? I don't see anyone being good enough to do that. I think Philip Gaines might be the second most talented guy in that secondary still, but right now, he seems to really be struggling. I don't know if he's still battling his injury or what. But I think it's probably Mitchell's job until he loses it, which very well could happen. From Rob DeSell, at Rob DeSell, Nelson and Mitchell both had their best games. Cooper and Crabtree were invisible. Carr had to rely on his third and fourth grade receivers. This is absolutely true. This is a great point. Another reason that Derek Carr looked bad in this game was because most of his targets, I believe, were going to those third and fourth guys, to his tight ends, because those receivers were being covered very, very well. Marcus Peters was a blanket. Terrence Mitchell was covering very well, and Steven Nelson was tremendous. So that's a great call there from Rob. Ty declare again, how many pinky/shotgun excuses are we going to hear from Raiders fans this week? All of them. National media, Raiders fans, Chiefs coverage guys. It's just because Derek Carr never took snaps from under center in this game because of his pinky. And yes, it's a factor. And having an injured quarterback stinks. Oh, well. I don't know what else to tell you about it. The Chiefs beat a healthy Derek Carr in Oakland and then a banged up Derek Carr in Kansas City with a lot more banged up version of the Chiefs team as well. So that's just sort of where I have very little empathy, I guess, for the Raiders, their health issues. From Jared Dunn, at Jared A. Dunn, how many yards did we net with those ridiculous passes in the flat? I'm going to just round it to zero, and I'm just going to go and call it even there. Because, man, some of that second half play calling was brutal. Calvin Esslinger, at Calvin Esslinger, CJ Esslinger, had an interesting tweet following up B.J. Kissel. B.J. Kissel was tweeting a quote from Andy Reid. He was asked about Tyreek Hill again. And Reid said, quote, I'm proud of him more for what he's done off the field than what he's done on the field. And Calvin said the PR message is reinforced. What exactly has he done off the field? That PR hasn't reached me. And it hasn't reached me either. I'm getting a little tired, a little drained of this PR turn of Tyreek Hill. They're trying to say that he somehow redeemed himself. We don't know if he's done anything, and there was never even like a public apology for, you know, again, hitting and strangling his pregnant girlfriend, which is miserable. Also, and this is something that I didn't even know if I was going to talk about today. Listening to Hill in post-game interviews and everything kind of makes his whole character a little more confusing, because he comes off as very humble, as very like level-headed, as very complimentary of his teammates and the opponent, while trying to limit himself in the praise and everything. Like, if you just listen to that, you go like, oh man, this is a kid who's got his head on straight. Like, this is like a humble dude that I'm glad is on the team. Seems like he's got to be a good presence in the locker room. Then you rewind to before the draft, and it's just like, how do you balance out? How do you find what this guy really is? And I don't know if you can. And at this point, because he is on the Chiefs, and I still, obviously the Chiefs made the right football move. He's probably the best player on the offense right now. They made the right football move. I don't know even still if I would have drafted him as the Chiefs. I don't know. Honestly, it's a lot harder to judge right now because he is so important on the offense. But since he is on the Chiefs right now, you do not have to cheer for him. And I don't blame you if you don't. And I still have a struggle cognitively kind of letting that tension exist there. But as I said, whenever they drafted him, I said as soon as he starts running back touchdowns, the criticism is going to turn into, well, he's turned his life around. And I'm going to even say this. After hearing him talk, I hope that that's a sign of him being in a better mindset now and him actually developing as a human being. That will never erase his domestic abuse. That's always there. That always exists. And I don't ever want to see a tweet from a Chiefs fan complaining about how the media keeps bringing up the fact that Tyreek Hill, back in his younger days, just happened to smack and strangle his pregnant girlfriend like it's no big deal. I don't ever want to see that tweet. It could be brought up every single game and be justified. It really could. I will never say, all right, guys, let it go. It's been a year now or whatever. I'm never going to say that. If it comes up in every time he's mentioned on ESPN's Twitter, if there are a bunch of tweets that say, yeah, but he's a piece of bleep, then that's the consequence of it. That's the consequence that he has to deal with and that Chiefs fans have to deal with for him being on the team. Not just a part of it. And I don't think you can complain about that. And maybe somewhere in there, you accept that. You hope that these signs of him maybe developing as a person are real and aren't just a PR fluff. And you accept that he's a really great player on your football team right now. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if you can do more than that, other than accept the very well-earned criticism of him and the organization. Hope he's gotten better. And be glad that he's on your football team as a player. And if there's anything that you don't have to do, it's accept that last bit. You don't have to be glad he's a Chief. You still don't. There's no shame in going, yeah, I wish he wasn't on this team still. But he is, so how do we deal with it? I think that's probably about all I got. Now over to Derek Vaughn again, who's been right for most of this season about things that I was wrong about. At @D_Vaughn88. It's a time to join me on the Terrence Mitchell bandwagon. Played lights out. Oh, and DJ, thanks for everything you are already missed. Also from Derek, he said, I was at the game before Tyreek took it to the house. The whole place was chanting his name. It was unreal. It was beautiful. And again, now, like, in the context of his past, like, is that beautiful? Is that kind of effed up? I don't know. But yes, Derek Vaughn has been right about Eric Berry and Dee Ford and Terrence Mitchell. He should start a podcast, and then I'll just quit whenever he gets going, because he's been on point this year. For Miles, at Miles McLaren, Casey of old does not win this game at a -3 turnover margin. Great grit by the defense. Good first half offense and special teams. Yes, 100%. You can't turn the ball over three times and then win against this Raiders team. That's impossible. But the Chiefs did it, and I don't think past Chiefs teams would have done it. From Thomas Harrell, at OU814US2, I really feel bad for DJ. More than likely, this will mean retirement. What do you think? Yeah, I could see him trying to mount a comeback again and and just not wanting to have an injury end his career, as a lot of guys do. And I would welcome that back, and I would welcome him as a linebackers coach the minute he decides to retire. He could retire tomorrow. He could say, I'm calling it quits, and I would give him a headset. I would give him a play sheet the second he wanted one, if that's what he would want to do. But I think at this point, if I had to guess, and it's just guessing, and it's kind of icky to even guess about, but I would say he tries to come back for next year, and maybe we're talking about the Chiefs being in a similar place and saying, hey, it's about time for Derek Johnson to return from the pup list, as Justin Houston did this year. I think that's kind of what if I had to bet money on it, that's where I would say he tries to come back one more time. But if he decides to say, this is the end for me, then you can't have a better career as an inside linebacker on the Chiefs. And then Michael Dewey also, so would you have preferred to have lose last night's game rather than DJ for the season? And that's hard. I don't know how to answer that, really. I mean, if you're going to make me answer that question, I do have some faith in the system. I don't know how many games Derek Johnson is worth at this point, like just in this year, like how many games do the Chiefs win with him that they don't win without him? And I tend to think the value of last night's game was bigger than the value of what Derek Johnson means for the rest of the season. But also, I mean, we take turning in also the idea of him being out for all of next season, maybe for his whole career. I don't think I can actually make that either or decision. But I'm very glad the Chiefs did win last night, because losing the game and Derek Johnson would have been absolutely miserable. Last question from Samir Hinjuna. He's struggling to rejoice because of our penalties, Derek Carr's pinky, the crap second half, and our inside linebacker shortage. Did we win, or did they flat out lose? The Chiefs won this football game, and I don't want to hear people, I don't want to hear Chiefs fans limiting what the Chiefs did. I don't want to hear Raiders fans saying, I don't really care what Raiders fans think, but I don't hear Raiders fans saying, oh, well, we're the better team. It's just that this and this and this. The NFL does not ever exist in a vacuum. NFL teams never exist in a vacuum. There's always context. The context of this game, the Chiefs didn't have either of their starting defensive ends, and they won't for the rest of the season. Didn't have Jamaal Charles, haven't this whole season. Lost Derek Johnson, won't have him the rest of this season. The Raiders had a pinky injury on their quarterback. The Chiefs played a poor second half and a great first half on offense. Defense was great all day. Within the context of NFL games, most of the time I think it's going to play out pretty evenly. And in this case, with the things the Chiefs had to work with and where the Chiefs are right now and where the Raiders are, the Chiefs won this game. The Raiders weren't giving anything up. The Chiefs won this game. No questions asked. Now, what does it mean for the Chiefs going forward? Is it a harder thing to measure yourself by? Sure. But what happens if the Chiefs go to New England for the A and the AFC Championship game? Because say that happens. The Chiefs don't have Howard and Bailey or Charles or DJ or... The Patriots don't have Rob Gronkowski. Like, there are factors like that across the board. So, I will say, with confidence, Chiefs won that game. Also, I almost missed two questions from Randy Singh, @Randy_Singh_. He said, the tempo was set early. The defense made Carr look like Brody Croyle. That's too far. That is mean to Derek Carr. Losing DJ is crushing, but all year the next man up has stepped up. And if last night's team shows up for the remainder of the season and playoffs, watch out Houston, Texas, which is where this year's Super Bowl is, in case you were unaware. I gotta say, for all of my, and maybe I might do a show, sometime during this long week for the Chiefs, talk about what happens with the Broncos maybe, and exactly how far the Chiefs can go, but especially if that first half team shows up, if that first half Chiefs team, that Falcons Chiefs team, if those guys show up in the playoffs, I don't know why you shouldn't go ahead and buy a couple of tickets to Houston. As always, thank you for listening to this show that would not be possible without the magic of the people who support this show through Patreon.com. At Patreon.com/RTK, that's Patreon.com/RTK, you can give a little bit of money every month to help support this show, $5, $10, $20. If you want to sponsor something on this show, if you think there's something that Chiefs Kingdom should know about that you want to sell, you can let me know, and we can work out something there. That's where the show gets supported financially, at patreon.com/RTK, by these people who have been supporting this show for a long time. I think everybody here has been here since the beginning of the season, at least. A bunch of these people have been supporting the show through the offseason. Tide Declare, @TideDeclare44, Andy Simpson, Randy Singh, @Randy_Singh_, Ray Hines, @BigTurfGuy, Derek Vaughn, @D_Vaughn88, $10 group is Christine Roadlander, @CRoadlander, and Todd Sullivan, @TitoSolovino, $5 group is Josh Beadle. I cannot say thank you enough to those people supporting the show, giving me their money every month to keep making the show at this, you know, incredibly high quality, very professional, very well done. Doing this show, especially after wins like this, especially when the Chiefs are good, doing this show is so much fun, and it simply wouldn't be possible without those people. And also you listening. If you like this show, subscribe on iTunes or through whatever podcasting app you use, so you make sure you always get the episodes as soon as they come out. I don't have a perfect schedule for this show because sometimes games are Thursdays, sometimes games are Sunday nights. Sometimes I'm not able to do a show till Wednesday. Sometimes I can't wait until after, just as soon as the final whistle blows. I want to make sure you're always getting the episodes. You can always listen to them through arrowheadaddict.com, which a lot of you do listen through. but subscribe to the show on iTunes or through your Android phone podcast app, anything you may want to use. I'm sure the show is there. If it's not, you can tweet me at JB Briscoe. Supporting the show financially is awesome, but if you can share this show with the other Chiefs fans in your life and just subscribe to the show, however you may, that is absolutely the next best thing. So as always, I cannot say thank you enough for listening to this podcast. As always, thank you for listening to the Roughing the Kicker Chiefs podcast on Blog Talk Radio and on ArrowheadAddict.com. I'll be back soon. I might be just to preview the Titans game and to give you plenty of time to get to that preview show. Or maybe I'll come back before that even and ask some questions, answer some questions about how far this Chiefs team can go. So you can tweet me at JB Briscoe or Facebook message me at facebook.com/RTK show, and I'll take your questions, your thoughts, more takes and takeaways type of thing. Anything you may want to talk about regarding where this Chiefs team can go going forward, how high the ceiling is, what would it look like in an AFC Championship game against the Patriots in New England, how could the Chiefs get that one seed? Anything like that that might be on the tip of your mind, I would love to talk about next week. But for now, we get a little bit of an extra long week to soak in what the Chiefs have done. On the road win, at home win against three real contenders. Chiefs are still probably a mirage. I don't think they can win a Super Bowl with Alex Smith. What do you guys think? You can go on Twitter and tweet at anybody and ask him that. A lot of hot takes. Bye, Mom.